Hello, listeners, to Many Stories, Many Games, where there is always another story to be told and another game to be played. I am Crest, and, well, obviously from the title of this episode, we are doing something fun for the month of October. And in addition to this, I am not the Dungeon Master for once, or even the GM.
Oh, that's a change.
It is. And so, why doesn't our guest star introduce themselves?
Hi, I'm Kyle. I am your game master today. Let me just back up that sentence. I'm from the podcast Quest Friends, and I designed a game called Under the Neighborhood, which is, I don't know if it's in the title or not, but like it's what we're doing today. And we're going to be playing in the world of Quest Friends hereafter, which we use this game for, which is all Halloween-y. And I'll get into that later. But yeah. I'm Kyle. Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Yep, and we're happy to have you. And on another note, this is apparently a three-way crossover, sort of. Because, in all honesty, To Save a Legacy, spoilers, has probably not aired by this point. So why don't my other two sort of guest stars, sort of cast, introduce themselves? Eric.
Oh, okie doke. I was going to say, which of the Tweedledum and Tweedledee do you want to go first? Hi, listeners of Many Stories, Many Games. My take two is not so good. Many Stories, Many Games. Hello, listeners of Many Stories, Many Games. You may recognize my voice from another podcast of Dungeons and Pop. This is Eric, and as always, I am joined with my... Well, I would say other half, but he is one of my best friends, and the other half of Dungeons and Pop.
Hey, listeners, it's Sean O'Dell, a.k.a. Rackham the Dancing Bugbear, a.k.a. Smoke Toast, a.k.a. Megaspork, producer of Dungeons and Pop, and resident hype man for Eric. And I am making my characters in a way that this is actually a pseudo crossover because I'm making another version of a character from Fictional Heroism.
So yeah, this is a crossover on many different levels. But first, the session zero, because Eric and Sean requested it, and also I did not make my character either, so yeah.
Well, it's also good to use a session zero to introduce a new game system, so that's also why I like session zeros.
Absolutely. Before we continue, a couple of quick things. So is the session zero going to be like recorded and aired as well?
Apparently we're doing it all in one go, so yeah.
Alright, I just wanted to make sure whether or not I was just like talking to you or if I did it as if I was cheating. Another quick thing before I forget, two other quick things. One, swearing, what's the policy on that?
The D&D campaign involves adultery, so you're fine.
Okay, cool.
We cuss a lot.
All right, fucking great. Yep. And then two, just so everyone knows, just a heads up, there is a small chance I might have to step out at some point for 15 minutes just because I'm selling my car today, and I told the guy, don't come until after we're done with the session.
Right.
But there's a chance he'll arrive earlier, and my fiance does not drive and knows nothing about cars, so I have to handle it. I also just have to sign it myself because it's my car. But
yeah, no, right. That's fair.
Anyways, I'll let you all go before it's handed back over to me.
One thing though, you're a little quiet to me.
Yeah, let me bump that up. I do that so when I get loud later on, it's not a problem. But I'll bump up my volume. Just know while editing. That at around 4:30, 4:40, my volume doesn't quite double, but it gets a little bit louder. Does that sound any better now?
That yeah. Sounds a lot better, thank you.
Before we get into this, I'm a big fan of the Money Cooks Consent in Gaming form, so and I know what Eric and Sean's do's and don'ts are, but I don't really know yours. And since this is vaguely Halloween-y, I'm okay with mild horror, but nothing super gory. So I'd like to set up a safe word that any of us can use real quick. And since the point of safe words is to use something that's that wouldn't come up normally, I think the word cornucopia should be fine.
Okay.
Cornucopia. Okay.
Sean, did you get that?
Yeah, cornucopia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And by safe word, it's kind of like an X card, essentially. If someone says it, go back, undo it, continue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
possibly a little pause to find out what exactly pulled the card.
Right. Okay. So, Kyle, what is Under the Neighborhood?
Thanks for asking. Under the Neighborhood is a role-playing game for 3 to 6 players inspired by cartoons like Gravity Falls, The Owl House, and Dead End Paranormal Park. Essentially, the idea behind it is that all of the players are regular people living in a magical world. In the world of the cartoons Under the Neighborhood is inspired from, you often have two different worlds. You have this kind of mundane world, and then you have a magical world that exists parallel to it. So to use the TV show Amphibia, for example, you have the regular world, which is just, it's Earth. Specifically, I want to say it's LA, or it's one of those towns in California. Towns, one of those cities in California. And then our magical world is a alternative dimension that is full of frog people living a vaguely medieval life. So Under the Neighborhood explores kind of the fun interaction of that, and specifically how everyday people live their lives and how kind of mundane aspects of life go, and kind of how mundane aspects of life, when combined with these magical settings, can turn into fantastical adventures.
This is powered by the Apocalypse, correct?
Yes, this is powered by the Apocalypse, and then we'll see during character creation and a bit during mechanics, it has a lot borrowed from Cypher System as well.
Oh.
Because this podcast, my podcast, Quest Friends, originally was Numenera for our first campaign, and my friends and I really like Cypher System, but Cypher System doesn't really lend itself well to like low-powered characters. You end up basically demigods by the end of any Cypher System game with how strong you are. And Powered by the Apocalypse works a lot better, in my opinion, for kind of regular people or playing around with mundanity. So I took the stuff I like from Cypher System, I slapped it on top of Powered by the Apocalypse, and then I painted it over with cartoons, and that's how we got Under the Neighborhood.
Neat.
Yeah, you're going to fit right in. Because Dungeons and Pop, we use a homebrew setting for Dungeons and Dragons 5e called Lasers and Liches, which is basically pop culture from the late 70s to the early aughts, but D&D style.
Oh.
So it's, you know, it's basically D&D neon punk.
What's the name of this again?
Dungeons Lasers. And
Dungeons and Pop.
Yeah, our podcast is Dungeons and Pop.
And we do a lot of homebrew stuff, like we've incorporated Monster of the Week's mixed success thing to how I do skill checks.
Oh, absolutely. I love home. Under the Neighborhood is the extension of me. It was the natural extension of me homebrewing enough in Numenera that I just decided to make my own system.
I actually DM'd a one-shot for Cypher System over there.
Yeah, and we were players, both, Sean and I. No, but the reason I brought up our podcast and Lasers and Liches is because our main podcast campaign is called Adventurers with Attitude. And if you know, you know, pop culture or kid shows, that phrase should sound familiar. Because we all play a Lasers and Liches class called Henshin, which is the Japanese word for transform. We play Power Rangers.
We don't even use the book. I ended up homebrewing it to make it feel more like Power Rangers because they based their class off of a Beastmaster Ranger. So it's interesting. Like, the Zords actually get feet at ASI, so then it acts like, it feels more like Power Rangers, where...
Yeah, the subclass of Henshin we play gets construct companions called Zords, X-O-R-D. So we are literally powered Rangers.
I love it. Incredible.
And I made it where the Zords are basically like persona summons. You can summon them to attack, and then they're in combat.
Yeah, so we're all about mixing, matching, and homebrewing.
So let's talk about the setting you're going to be dragging us through, Kyle.
Yeah, absolutely. So
dragging, like we're not going like we're not going willingly.
We're dragging you out of the ground like a zombie, because
that fits
the setting. Under the Neighborhood is a quote unquote system agnostic game. It has a couple of, you know, clear inspirations, and there are some universal things about the world. You have kind of regular world and your magical world. Mm-hmm. But where you go from there is determined by the players. In our case, our players created a world. In our case, my players created the world of Quest Friends Hereafter. Quest Friends Hereafter. In the world of Quest Friends Hereafter, the realm of the dead is only a plane ride away. So you have the realm of the living called the Here, and then the Hereafter, which is where you go when you die. And there's a lot of crossover from that. Essentially, you can go visit the Hereafter if you're living, and if you're dead, you know, a skeleton, a zombie, a vampire, a white, you can also go to the realm of the living. It just kind of determines where you permanently live.
So not to interrupt, and I do apologize, but it kind of reminds me of...
Coco?
Yeah, Coco.
Yeah, absolutely. We took heavy inspirations from places like Coco and places like Coco. We took a lot of inspiration from works like Coco. That kind of, while the Hereafter is not directly meant to be, you know, the land of the dead,
right?
We definitely take heavy inspiration from that, and specifically from the idea of Coco, where the land of the dead is kind of this big bustling metropolis. In the Hereafter, we have a mega city called Necropolis, which kind of serves as that.
I mean, it's a classic name, but. I love puns and wordplay. You missed an opportunity to call it something like Boo York.
Well, maybe Boo York is one of the smaller cities that's got aspirations. Or maybe that's just what New York is called in the realm of the living. Because we've messed up with names before. We have, for example, Sarvia is our name for our version of Russia, where everyone is a czar. And the Romanovs are still alive for some reason.
Interesting.
Even though we're in the modern day. So where our game... So that's pretty much the basic setup. As players, you'll be able to play as people who are living. You'll be able to play as one of the dead. The only other couple of things that are good for us to know is that we have ghostly creatures that come from a land beyond the Hereafter called Necromon, which are basically ghostly Pokemon that say their name backwards. Additionally, unless we want to visit Boo York today, I'm absolutely more than willing to do that. Our setting will take place in the main kind of town of Quest Friends Hereafter, which is the Valley. The Valley is a small city nestled in the middle of a mountain range in the what would be kind of considered the American Southwest, and it's in the Land of the Living. It's called the Valley because it's just Phoenix, Arizona, which is part of a cluster of cities called the Valley. And since that's where I live now, I decided that's going to be our setting.
So, fun fact... Sean lives in Arizona.
Oh, fun.
And I live in Texas.
Well, yeah.
Hi, neighbor.
Hey. I'm over by University and River.
Awesome. I am I'm right on the border of Phoenix and Scottsdale. I walk across the street and I'm in Scottsdale. So it's always distressing because their garbage goes at a different day of the week. So I'll go outside, I'll see garbage cans on the opposite side, and I'll be like, oh no, did I forget? Is it garbage day? And I'm like, no, it's like Friday, Kyle. You're on a different day of the week.
I love that. Funny how this stuff works out.
I've seen a lot of especially fiction podcasters, I feel like, or actual play people. I keep talking and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'm in Arizona too." And I'm like, "How is everyone here? I don't know."
I honestly put the blame on what's the name of the podcast? Eric, you know which one? Our friends,
Knocked Around, Thornvale.
No, the one that stopped.
Fantasy Banjo.
Yeah. Before they stopped podcasting, they did a lot of interactions here. That's my first introduction to the community. Like, I got invited to like a thing at before Comic Con. It was kind of neat.
So cool.
Alrighty, so we know a bit about the setting. And I'm guessing what we're doing there will depend upon our characters.
Essentially, when we create character... Let's get into character creation.
Right.
One thing off the recording before we... just so everyone knows, if you'd like to know more about the setting of Hereafter, you can ask me questions at any point about, like, how does this work? How does this work? You can also, in the rulebook on page... 97 if you're counting the pages on the book, or 101 if you're counting the PDF pages. I have a couple of notes about, like, oh, here are some, you know, cities, organizations, Necromon, NPCs. I'm not planning to do a whole lot of references to Hereafter. I don't want this to be a whole wink, wink, nudge, nudge, who's that person? You know, might do it once for fun, but it might give you some inspiration about, like, because it tells about, like, oh, here are big players in the world, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, let's get started in character creation. So, in Under the Neighborhood...
I apologize for interrupting. I just wanted to ask beforehand, do you happen to have a fillable PDF of the character sheet?
I do. Let me...
Thank you. That's going to save us so much trouble.
Yeah, let me send... Yeah, because at the time, I didn't have the folder set up, so I just sent the thing. Let me...
I think my character will work well for this.
I think, honestly, since the Pokemon thing is a thing, I think I might actually go for that.
That's our big thing of this arc. All right, so I just sent a folder in the comments. You can either choose one of the ones that says interactive, that's the fillable one, or there's one that says Google Drive version, because I actually like doing character sheets on Google Docs.
That's fair.
And that one actually is not public, but I find it easier to use when I'm on Google Drive. So either that or the interactive should be fillable. Can I get started on
apologies.
Okay, no worries. All right, let's get into character creation. So in Under the Neighborhood, character mechanics and character personalities are very closely intertwined. So the way our process is going to work is, first, everyone's going to grab a character sheet, and we're then going to choose a playbook and a descriptor. Playbooks, if you're familiar with Powered by the Apocalypse, playbooks will sound familiar to you. If you're used to Cypher System, descriptors will sound familiar to you, although they're actually foci from Cypher System.
Okay.
So the way it works is playbooks kind of summarize your character's overall thing. They are the guardian, they protect others. They are the weird, they're not a regular person. They're strange and bizarre and otherworldly, like Bill Cipher from Gravity Falls or Hootie from the Owl House. Then you
and
choose
booty is very strange.
Then you choose a descriptor. A descriptor is kind of a specific thing your character is good at. I perform stage magic. I am an escape artist. I can change my face. They don't give you as many options as a playbook does in, like, where a playbook will give you multiple different moves or abilities you can do. A descriptors will give you one, but that one will be very powerful. And no player should have each of them. No player should have, and every player should have a unique playbook and a unique descriptor. Once you've determined that, and we've kind of walked through some of the options those give you, that's when you determine things like what's your character's name, pronouns, age, appearance, stuff like that. And then after you've used the mechanics to inform your character, we go back to the mechanics after you've created your character and say, all right, now that we've fleshed out our character a little bit more, is there anything mechanically we need to go and adjust again to better fit the character? I'll walk you through step by step, but I figured that's kind of the overall... I figured it'd be helpful to do the overall summary of, we start with mechanics, we flesh that out to a character, and then we use the character to adjust the mechanics.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay, perfect. So the first step, as I said, is we need to choose a playbook. So we have 8 different playbooks. We have the Guardian, who is all about protection, the Intuition, all sorts of... The Guardian, who is all about protection, the Intuition, who leaps headfirst into danger or friendship, the Journalist, who is more of that kind of thoughtful note-taking character, the Opportunist, kind of the con artist person, and the book really focuses on, oh, they get high highs and low lows. The Divide, and those are the kind of basic 4, and then the next 4 are a bit more specialized. So we have the Divided, a character who has a mysterious power from a dangerous patron. The Mon Trainer, this is the kind of character who would capture and train the Necromon I mentioned earlier. The Weird, someone who's just very weird. And then the Animal, the Weird, which is a character who is strange and has... who has, in their own term, mysterious powers, but less in like the, ooh, mysterious and powerful, and more in just, that's odd that they can do that.
I'm going to say, at the risk of getting people in a tizzy, Luna Lovegood from the series written by She Who Shall Not Be Named.
No, that sounds about fair. She is a little... She is a little weird. I don't know why I would... I mean, okay, this is just my personal opinion. I don't know if I would classify her as weird. I mean, she's odd, sure, but she's not any weirder than any other, you know, wizard or witch.
Okay.
I would say she may be a journalist because of all of her odd knowledge about all the things that even wizards don't believe in. But again, that's just my personal opinion on the matter.
Yeah, I think that's a good interpretation of it, though. Someone like Journalist or would fit her well. The Weird is a very practical thing. The Weird is the kind of creature who just suddenly appears behind you and you never know how they're there. Examples from cartoons are things like Glossaric from Star vs. the Forces of Evil, or... Well, I mentioned Hootie and Bill Cipher. Things that are even somehow more magical than the magical creatures that exist. And then finally, the Animal Companion. You're a cute little critter. You're a friend.
Scooby-Doo.
Exactly, you're Scooby-Doo. So we'll each have to choose one of these playbooks, and then the playbook will walk us through other decisions we have to make.
Since he's apparently already halfway there, why don't we start with Sean?
Well, Kyle, I need your advice because I'm trying to figure out if this character should be the Divided or the Weird. I am actually using a version of a character from our Monster of the Week game, Fictional Heroism, called Wesley Booker.
Okay.
To quote the character's in character description, I got a ghost on my back and it won't let go.
Won't let go. The ghost
His thing is sort of like, it's kind of like the movie The Ring.
Yeah.
Oh, what if the ghost was, didn't kill you, but it was a yander to you, and it was
a yandere?
A yandere. Basically, he has a ghost. He has like a. I was thinking the divided, maybe, but now I'm not so sure. Maybe that might be weird.
I think it depends. I think if you were the ghost, the weird would fit. In this case, I feel like the divided would fit better. The divided is all about the relationship between you and something that gives you powers. And from what I can tell with Wesley, it kind of feels, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, like Wesley's relationship with the yandere ghost is a critical aspect of that character.
Yeah, like I kind of used them as a spooky monster of the week terms.
Yeah. If that relationship between these, I think the way to think about it is, if these are two distinct characters, the ghost and Wesley, and their relationship is important, go with the divided. If they're just kind of the same entity and doing weird stuff, then go with the weird.
I would say divided, and that was what I originally thought, but I thought about it. I was looking at it at the abilities, and I wasn't sure.
Considering that I can see this yandere ghost doing things, quote unquote, for Wesley, you could kind of flavor that, you know, her doing things as giving him power in a way.
Yeah.
Which fits with Kyle's description of the divided.
And now you know why I said my character would fit with this setting.
And it's perfect because we have not every type of dead has specific rules. Except for ghosts. Every time, ghosts do something different because I haven't decided how I want them to work functionally. So it's perfect.
Well, at the very least, I'm not. At the very least, I'm not playing my ghost character. I say that because my ghost character comes. His original version comes from a superhero world where he was my attempt at a quote unquote cosmic tier level character. Something along the lines of, say, you know, the Spectre, Silver Surfer, possibly even Ghost Rider. My ghost character is a psychopomp, so, you know, there's that.
All right. Well, speaking of other characters, let's, I think, all decide our playbooks, and then we can kind of walk through what we have to do from there.
Okay.
I have decided to go as basic as I possibly could. I went the Guardian.
Perfect.
Oh, that's neat.
And what about our last one?
Weird as it is, once I heard that you actually were doing spirit mon stuff, I'm like, no, I have to be the mon trainer. That sounds fun.
Sounds good. Well, let me pull out my list of mon.
Duh! Yokai Watch! Or Shaman King for older listeners.
All sorts of
ghostly mon.
Yeah, I'm looking anime. At the little like orbs that are hanging around them.
There you go.
At least in the Shaman King. All right, let me. Perfect. So. Next, what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at each of the playbooks. So when we have our playbooks, we have to determine a few things. First, we're going to choose our stat loadout from two offered ones. So you have usually have two variants. So, for example, for the Guardian, we have Bruiser, which is focuses more on a character who's going to be fighting, or Teddy Bear, a character who's a Guardian because they're just so full of love. You have four stats, which all kind of, they aren't focused on your physical abilities. They're focused on how you approach the world. So Heart, you're focused on approaching people and understanding each other. Books, nerd stuff. You know, you're good at technical stuff. You're good at academic information.
You say that with a smile on your face, mister. We're all nerds here.
Fierce, you run straight into danger. You are aggressive to your core. And then Slick is all about subterfuge. So sleight of hand, stealth, lying. So those are what the four stats are. They're going to impact our basic moves, which are the things everyone can do. Once you choose a... Oh, go ahead.
I picked my stats.
All right, perfect. What'd you go with?
I went with Bruiser.
All right.
Interesting.
Which is heavy, fierce. What is everyone else... what did everyone else pick? Let's go for stats quickly. And one thing to note about the Mon Trainer... Let me get back to that.
Crest went Guardian... Sean went the divided. I'm doing the Mon Trainer.
Yeah, Mon Trainer. Dueling is death. Slick should be minus one. That's an error in the book that I'm gonna fix. Later on.
Good if to know. But Slick I was gonna play. Pick Dueling is fun anyway.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, and that one is balanced. What are we thinking for Wesley and the divided?
I'm conflicted now since we already have one heavy, fierce person, because originally I was going to go violent magic, but maybe 12, because I almost thought about going 12 too deep, but I was just thinking about how Wesley's kind of like, as a character, he's kind of like, not withdrawn.
That's the
but
header, that's what that was, okay.
How would you put it, Eric? You've played with Wesley.
He's Yeah, but it's been forever since I played with Wesley, so...
Maybe 12 too deep works, too. I don't know. What do you think, Kyle? Is it better to have a more variety playing it?
I think it works fine either way. You know, I'm the kind of person, when I play Pokemon, I will never have two Pokemon with the same element. So I err on the side of, oh, let's have variety. But also, this is not... You know, this is, to use D&D as an example, this is not D&D, or especially like Pathfinder, where if you don't have the same stat, where if you don't have diverse stats and plans, you're screwed. This is powered by the apocalypse. Failure is part of the game. So okay, if you want to focus on one stat as a team, you can do that. I once had two characters who were super high and who had super low heart, basically have to do a bunch of heart things in a row by sheer coincidence. So...
That is hilarious. I love it.
You know, I think I'm going to go with Violent Magic, and that also makes it fun because I just noticed one of the required moves I need to take. So chaos, me rolling high, that adds for more chaos.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, let's move on to that. So the second thing you do once you pick a playbook is you pick your moves. So as I mentioned earlier, we have basic moves, which are things anyone can do. We also have things called character moves. These are specific abilities only you have. And you're all going to pick three, except for the divided, which picks four. And again, these are special moves that you have that you'll be able to harness at any point. Sometimes they might mention something called AP. AP is a resource, a lot like XP in Cypher System, if you've ever played that, that you'll essentially get over the course of the game that you can use to activate moves. So yeah, just pick what you want. If you have a required move, like the Patron and the Mon Trainer do, that counts towards one of your four. So for example, with the Mon Trainer, I think the Mon Trainer actually has two required
ones. Yeah.
So you will automatically get I Choose You, you will automatically get Wild Mon Capture, and then you get to choose a third one in addition to that. It's a bit more limiting than the others, but that's kind of the exchange we have for you get to have just a bunch of other characters following you around at any point.
All right, and these would go in the playbook and descriptor moves.
Exactly, yes.
How old is Wesley, Sean?
I haven't figured out. I'm doing this version younger than the other one, so I'm thinking like probably 12, 13.
Okay.
Yeah, that was another question. What's the age range for
It can be whatever you want. You know, in these cartoons, oftentimes characters tend to be about tweens or young teens, you know, anywhere from 12 to 14. But one of the things I love about them is that they often include older characters as well. You know, Gravity Falls, one of the main characters is Grunkle Stan. A man older. And in our game, Hereafter, we have an 11-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 40-something-year-old, and then a man who is a skeleton, so he is hundreds of years old. So really, we can run the gauntlet age-wise.
All right. Yeah, I'm thinking going with 13, so I'm like picturing my character in the group dynamic. I'm Zeus with a stand.
Used with a stand, okay.
I think I have my three moves.
Okay, perfect.
How many AP do we start with, or is it at zero?
You will start with one for your first session. And then you will gain AP either when you roll a failure or when I give you a GM intrusion, which is another cipher system mechanic. Essentially, I get to make things harder for you, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. But you get an AP in exchange. Yeah, I think a lot of the moves, if there's a move you really like that you want to point out, you can. Otherwise, I think there are only two moves we should really talk about, which are the Divided and the Mon Trainer, because they're very core to the character. So the Divided, as we have mentioned, Divided is all about a patron. The Divided gets a corruption meter. Essentially, this is the core mechanic of the Divided. Moves that they can do will essentially increase this corruption meter, and when it reaches a certain amount, which is 10 points normally, I still have to write one-shot versions that make that meter a little more threatening for a one-shot character, but essentially once it maxes out, you then have a rough moment. Maybe you have a fight with your ghost friend. Maybe you have a breakup. You know, maybe the Andre is just too much. You know, something comes to a head. Conversely, the Mon Trainer, which in our case is a Necromon Trainer, will get to carry around little Mon with them. You can have up to three, and it's recommended that these Necromon are played by other players, so they're kind of like their own independent creatures. Necromon have a name, an element, and then a signature stat. So, you know, I maybe have, for example, I have the Boidal Rat, which is a possum that covers itself in trash, a skeleton possum. Its element is trash, and its signature stat is slick. Of the four stats, it's really good at, you know, stealing trash. So that's the thing it's good at. And these Mon can be, just like in Pokemon, you can say, hey, I choose you, Boidal Rat. Do bite that thing real hard. Or these creatures can also move around on their own. Whoever, you know, is playing the Boidal Rat, for example, in this hypothetical scenario, can say, yeah, Boidal Rat's just going to go explore that thing in the corner. Assuming, again, the creature is out and not held inside of the card, which is our version of
Okay, cool.
Oh yeah, Kyle, I have a suggestion based off of something I noticed for one of the moves that I think would make sense for the one shot. One for all, you mentioned about if you're using on a target without a corruption meter, agree to help pay the cost, either spend one AP or start a new corruption meter with a value of five. That seems like it would make sense for a one shot over a value of five.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, so let's set that meter to a value of five right now.
Okay, got that on my meters.
All right, everyone figure out their moves.
Yeah, I have my two required of I Choose You and Wild Mon Capture. I went with Mon Assistance.
Oh, I haven't seen someone choose that before. So that's when a Mon can help you out to do something, right?
Between adventures, you and your Mon continue to train to be the very best. Start each adventure with the amount of AP you have saved, plus one, max of three.
Oh, okay, perfect. Yeah, so that is... that is misnamed. I will fix that.
Oh,
we'll call it Mon Assistance today. We have two Mon Assistants in the rule books.
Oh yeah, you're right. No, I chose the first one, that's you use the move Help a Friend to help you out. Roll plus heart.
Okay, is misnamed for the second one in the rule book. One thing I want to notice, if you do get this game, I am making a revised version with the typos removed sometime in 2023, and anyone who buys the game, I'm going to find a way to get it so that you have access to that revised version.
All you have to do is just do that, put it up on itch, and not say you updated it, and people who bought it can re-download it.
Perfect. Yeah, that is the plan. I'll have to figure out what people who buy it through DriveThruRPG. I think I can do the same thing.
You can.
Okay, oh, yeah, perfect. Yeah. There have been a couple of times where I've gotten, hey, this person's updated their thing. Go download it.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so I'm saving a list so that it's not, you know, a new version every 5 days. But I will be putting that. But perfect, mon assistance. So before we... I eventually want to know what your Necromon are. But before we get into that, let's finish our playbooks and our descriptors, and then we can talk about those mon when we talk about our character. So one last thing for playbook is you need to choose a skill and an inability. So in Under the Neighborhood, when you roll to do something, you roll 2 6-sided dice and you add your stat to it, and then the result is determined by that. You can also roll with advantage, where if you roll 2d6, you can also roll with advantage, where you roll 3 6-sided dice and you add together the results of the top two, or you can roll with disadvantage. You roll 3 6-sided dice, you take the results from the bottom two. There are multiple ways to get advantage. One of them is through a skill, which is something you're particularly good at. That's not like a special ability. It's anyone can try it, but you're very good at it. Like, I don't know, playing piano. And then an inability is something you're bad at that you would roll with disadvantage. Like, again, singing, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just using myself as an example for skills and inabilities.
Boy, I know that feeling.
Why you ask? I saw a talent show the other day where so many people had singing as their talent. And I'm like, you brave souls, braver than I. Anyways, your playbook gives you a list of ideas for a skill and a list of ideas for an inability.
Already have mine ready, including descriptor moves. Should I just go through it?
Let's wait on descriptor moves right now.
Okay.
But I'd love to know your skill and inability that you chose from your playbook.
I picked intimidation for my skill, and inabilities is understanding the magical.
Perfect. You got a ghost there, you know nothing about her.
I put my skill is intimidation, and my inability is... You know what, I want to go with being alone.
Okay, I like that one.
Basically, my voice is big and scary, but I also don't like being alone with it.
Yeah.
I feel like Wesley is struggling to make friends because he seemed paranormal.
Ouch. So, to the surprise of neither of these two, I'm sure, my skill is cooking. And my inability is bureaucracy. I hate red tape and I just cannot stand it.
Oh, beautiful. Time to make sure you have to go through like the DMV or something. And I'm not just saying
figured, you know, this is the afterlife. There's going to have to be some kind of bureaucracy involved. Because there always is, isn't there?
Oh. Don't worry about the Bureau. You don't bother the Bureau, they won't bother you.
You see, I don't like how you put that.
Listen, they're the Bureau of Immortal Enforcement. It's not like their name is Bite or anything like that. They're friendly.
Bureau of Inter what?
Intermortal. Dealing with the interactions between the land of the living and the land... between the realm of the... Dealing with the interactions between the here and the hereafter. Between mortality. Right.
I'm going to be an anal retentive little dork and point out that intermortal is B-I-M-E, not B-I-T-E. Because you said, you know, it's not like their name is Bite.
Well, you know, I like the int rather than the M.
All right, that's fair.
All right. That's fair. So, now that we've all chosen our playbook, which is our big thing, we now choose a descriptor. Again, this is something much more specialized. So something like, I don't feel pain, or I have a podcast, or I am particularly small.
I, actually, on that note, that's what I picked. I picked is particularly small.
Wonderful. And so what each of these are going to give you is they're going to give you a move. They're going to give you a skill and an inability, although some don't. And then they will give you a signature item, which is a mundane thing you have that essentially whenever you use it, it works as a skill. It gives you advantage. So, for example, one of our characters has a SmackBook Pro. So if she does research on it or whacks something with it, she rolls with advantage.
SmackBook, that's cute.
And, you might notice for moves there are things called advanced. You can ignore that. That's part of leveling up and advancement. You can get stronger versions of the moves, but
nice.
We won't do that today. All right, so I know two of us have descriptors.
Wait,
what about...
Did I? Sorry, I was just going through the PDF, and I'm like, wait a minute, did I see? Yeah, and I saw it, Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Feel pain.
If there's anything I know about Darkwing Duck, it's that no amount of physical trauma can stop him.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong.
You've seen the latest DuckTales, right, Kyle?
I have. I haven't finished the third season, but I've watched a lot of the rest of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm conflicted.
I'm not. I took the obvious one. I'm the Mon trainer who talks to creatures.
I'm tempted between does whatever an animal can and possibly has a podcast.
Oh, Prince Ezrin. Nice. Look, if you don't takes a podcast, one of us has to take that.
Every crossover I've done, no one has done has a podcast, and it's made me terribly sad. It is
all right. I'm going to do that. I'm taking has a podcast.
Perfect.
If you weren't, I was seriously tempted to take that just because.
I'll tell you bad news though, is that once we actually start playing, we will start with that podcast, and I will need a name for it. So think on that.
Dungeons and Pops.
Okay, so we have all of those. We're almost to the point where we can do our character summary, which is like a Cypher system character sentence where we say what our character's deal is. Before that, we need things like what our character's name is. So now that we figured out mechanically what our character is, what stats they've focused on, now's the point where we choose the more demographic stuff. What's your character's name? What pronouns do they use? What is their age? Appearance? Homeworld is talking about, do you come from the here or the hereafter? And you could even specialize things like, I come from the valley in the here, or, you know, I come from Boo York in the hereafter. And then finally, I'd like to have every character to have a basic want. This doesn't have to be something you're obsessed with, but it just kind of gives you an idea of what's something that motivates my character. Do I want to protect my friends? Do I want money? Do I want to find the person who killed my father? And, you know, my father's just really... I hate going to the hereafter. It's a real hassle to visit him. So I just want to find this guy and give him peace of my mind. Stuff like that.
I have my stuff ready if you're fine with it.
Yeah.
Okay, my character's name is Tatiana. Her pronouns are she, her. She's 12. Her appearance is that she's a goth girl. Her homeworld is the here. And her want is a world that makes sense.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's you'll be wanting for a while. You know, that motivation will keep you going, so perfect. And then what was your playbook and descriptor again?
I am the guardian who is particularly small.
Perfect. So you would be Tatiana, the guardian who is particularly small.
Yep.
Love it. Any other basic things we want to know about Tatiana?
No.
Alright, perfect. What about our other two characters?
I always struggle with a name. Like, for real. Unless I have an idea for a character that's kind of... well, like what Sean's doing. He's, you know, it's basically a different version of this character who already has a name. I always struggle with naming my character.
Yeah.
Why not reuse? Why don't you reuse the M.A., Eric?
M.A.?
Give me a heroic speech.
No! Damn it! well, it is a name, and I do like the name.
I mean, Marcus Albright sounds like a Pokemon trainer name. I'm sorry.
It does.
It really
does. Unfortunately, it kind of sounds like a rival name or like one of the gym leaders, but it fits very well.
Yeah, Marcus is the Red Ranger of our game. I am the face of the party.
Well, you're the face of your Necromon team, so...
All right, I am Marcus Albright, the Mon Trainer who talks to creatures.
Wonderful. All right, and then finally, Wesley. What is Wesley's summary?
Wesley Booker, pronouns he, him, age 13, appearance... Let me double check something. I'm almost done with it. Let's see. I would say he appears disheveled and drinks a lot. Looks like he drinks a lot of coffee. His want is a life full of adventure that he can survive.
All right, I like that. That's fun.
Oh, I never said any of that. Whoops.
Yeah. Oh, what's your want? Let's go with that.
Okay. Where would that go on the sheet?
Under want, it's right under homeworld.
Not on the not under the Google one.
Oh.
Yeah, the Google one I think is missing it.
Oh, signature item. There's that. Okay. Well, I was thinking I would be age 15, and my want, I want to see and experience all of what I can of my spirit buddy's homeworld.
Okay.
I want to go on adventures with my spirit buddy and see their wide, wide, weird world.
Love it. All right. So, just one to two more things before we can get to what would be the gameplay portion. So, now that you've created your character, you have the ability to change a couple of things. First off, you can adjust your stats if you've determined, you know, my character would be better at heart, or my character would be more fierce. All your stats added together should equal +1. So, when if I have -2 heart, +1 fierce, +0 slick, and +2 books, all of those added together equal +1, if I did my math correctly. You can also change any of your skills and inabilities. In the rulebook, we have a list of 100 possible skills, which can also be inabilities. So if you're like, maybe I'm not that good at intimidation, maybe I'm good at, I don't know, crocheting, you can
underwater
adjust
basket
that.
Weaving.
Exactly. So we can change those mechanics, and then once we're happy with those, we have one final thing, and then it'll be time to discuss something else, but that other thing we're discussing will be part of the actual session rather than the session zero prep.
Fair enough. Stat-wise, I was thinking taking one from my heart and moving it to fierce, so it's +1, +1, 0, -1.
Okay.
But there's a part of me that's like, you know, no, because the Mon Trainer has the whole power of friendship thing about them, and, you know, that requires a lot of heart, I would say, yeah. So
oh,
that makes sense.
I completely forgot, you need to have at least one Mon. Tell me about your Mon or Mons. Oh. I guess plural of mon would still be mon, but the S made it clear that I was talking singular than plural.
Yeah, no, you're right. I've been trying to come up with something, and I don't know.
If you want, I can give you a list of ones we've had appear in the show. Let me see.
Well, all right. So I do have one bit of an idea, but I was kind of flip-flopping on if I should go with it or not, but
okay.
Why not? So it's a tiny little Grim Reaper.
Okay.
It is literally just a cloak with a floating cloak with skeletal hands. You don't see his arms, you don't see any feet. He's got a blank sort of face, and instead of a scythe, it carries like a staff or a crook that has a lantern on it.
Okay.
And I want to call it Graveling.
I see what you did there.
With the lantern. And you said Graveling?
Yes.
All right, let me figure out what that is in reverse. Ling. Gnil.
Gnil. Well, I mean, it's spelled out Grave, L-I-N-G, so.
Yeah. Gnil and then Grave. Verg. Gnilverg. It's not perfect, but that's what it would say in reverse. Gnilverg.
We can't all be Zatanna.
Yeah.
I love it. What would Graveling's element and signature stat be?
Okay, so I'm thinking,
what are the elements?
Well, there's 50 elemental ideas in the book. Yeah.
So some examples of ones we've had possessed, trash, water, plant. You know, this could be, we could be as basic as fire, because Graveling has the little lantern.
You know, number 47 on the list, undead, again, obviously.
Okay.
Although I personally would prefer something like spirit instead.
Okay. Yeah, let's go with spirit. I like that.
Oh, ghost type, so, you know. But spirit sounds, well, like we're not ripping off Pokemon, so.
Exactly. Perfect. And then Graveling. Is Graveling more heartfelt, more into books, more into fierce, or more into slick?
Well, let's see. I mean, it is a little floating Grim Reaper, technically.
Yeah.
So that would be kind of scary, so I want to say fierce.
Okay.
But I can also see it leaning in towards heart, because the lantern, it's not a scythe. The lantern lights the way for lost spirits. He's a helper. He's a ferryman.
Yeah, well, the way I see it from what you described, the first one you described how people might perceive it, and the second one was you described how it was, and I would lean towards what is Graveling like? So between those, I really like heart. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. It sounds like the, you know, the two different versions of the Pokédex.
what's on
red versus blue version.
This is a horrifying creature. He loves everyone. Mm-hmm. Hope you chose the right, hope you chose, I don't know, under the neighborhood version skeleton.
Yeah.
Rather than ghost.
Under the neighborhood magical versus mundane version.
Exactly. All right, so we've got Graveling. So as I said, I encourage a different player to play this Grim Reaper. Does this Grim Reaper, again, you have a Necro card, which is a card that you keep them in. Does Graveling hang out in the card usually, or is Graveling usually just kind of hanging out in your shoulder, running around like a Pikachu?
He's very much a shoulder pet.
Okay, perfect. So to kind of give Graveling more life than a regular NPC, I encourage that these Necromon go to a different player. So, Sean or Crest, which of you would be interested in playing Graveling?
I think it'd probably better be Sean because he knows Eric better.
Yeah, I was going to say, considering Sean's reaction when he heard the name, I think Sean can encapsulate the personality.
I think I would upset Eric. I would probably exaggerate Asterix. Okay, I'll do Ghostling.
Perfect.
Graveling.
So Graveling, whenever Graveling speaks, to anyone else will sound like it's saying Nilvarg or some variant of. But then to Marcus, you will actually be able to speak to him directly. So it'll be very confusing for Wesley and Tatiana if Marcus and Graveling have conversations. It'll be like, I don't know, Han and Chewie in Star Wars, essentially. All right, perfect.
I'm just picturing Graveling and my ghost just staring at each other menacingly like the baby. The baby with the big eyebrows and Maggie and the Simpsons.
Oh, God.
I love it. Yeah, one final thing. We don't need to have this recorded. Your Yandere ghost, tell me a bit about her, because that she would probably be someone I would play, because the patron usually is, but I need to know about this character.
I've just pictured them like they're very protective of Leslie. I was kind of picturing, with how you described the world, he may have actually walked into a haunted house.
Okay.
And this one just kind of like, and may have put himself into danger, and then this one just kind of glopped onto him like, no, mine, and was protecting him the whole way, and he's having trouble. He's kind of like, he's grateful, but he's kind of like in a sense where he's not sure how to understand it sometimes.
Absolutely. And what's the ghost pronouns?
She, her.
Okay, perfect.
Banshee demoness.
And does she have a name?
I haven't given it one before. I'm open to suggestions on that.
Okay. I can't think of anything. All I could think is Maggie, because of the Maggie Simpsons reference. My thought was, oh, is that the name? And then it kept going. I'm like, no.
That kind of fits, because then there's also like the phrase Mad Maggie.
Okay.
And then it kind of gives that whole appearance of like, now I'm just fearing the disheveled curly
kind of a Bloody
hair.
Mary. Well, you also mentioned Sadako, the ring of ghosts. So kind of long disheveled hair, probably a simple dress or something.
Well, and now I'm picturing her as kind of Irish looking, like the red hair, red curly hair, but disheveled.
Oh, I like that.
Going with a banshee kind of feel.
Yeah, like I feel like now I'm thinking that this is making me flesh her out more than I ever did in the two mysteries I used her in before. Actually, like four mysteries before. So I almost, now this is, maybe one is against this, I almost picture them as they are actually the ghost of an old witch.
Okay.
From long ago. But they've been a ghost so long, and they've been doing all this thing, they've forgotten, and latching on to Wesley has kind of given them something to settle on, so they probably appear about his age, because even though they're so old, it's kind of like a reset, and it's almost kind of like, you like, you know the meme, hello my fellow kids.
Oh God.
How do you do, fellow? Yeah, exactly.
She's kind of that way, where like Wesley has given, I think, even though it's supposed to, like how the divide is mentioned, it's kind of has kind of both an adversary, slightly adversary. I think it's kind of like, I almost picture it almost kind of like the pararomantic in the Monster of the Week. When it's good, they're good for each other, but there's always that threat of falling back into who she used to be, if that makes sense. That's kind of like my corruption thing is measuring how much Wesley is able to stabilize her and allow her this new life as a ghost that is following him around.
Yeah, I like that.
I was actually kind of thinking of how I met my little dude.
Yeah, tell me about your little dude.
I'm thinking Graveling actually saved Marcus's life.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure how he was able to get into the magical world, but he stumbled upon it, and let's reverse that. Graveling did save Marcus's life, but it was in the mundane world.
Okay, so it was in the here, yeah.
It was in here. And literally kind of saved his life. Near-death experience, basically. And Graveling was like, no, it's not your time, and brought Marcus's soul back to his body. And ever since then, he's been not obsessed, but like wanting to learn more. Probably the fact that, you know, since he can talk to creatures and understand creatures, that's what probably got him into trouble in the first place. So there's a good chance he accidentally stumbled across a hereafter creature that he really shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And Graveling was there to pull his fat out of the fryer. And since then, due to the near-death experience, they've actually bonded and became friends and, you know, traveling companion. Half traveling companion, half this boy's gonna get himself killed. I have to protect him. Yeah, on Graveling's
Sis gave me an idea for the rivalry.
Oh?
Maggie rubs it in Graveling's face that the one she's protecting didn't die first.
Ooh.
That is fun, especially because if your soul left your body, you did technically die for a second.
Yeah.
Through the mechanics of the world. That is what is considered death, is when the two separate.
And I think Graveling knows, I feel like Graveling knows a little of Maggie's history, and it's like, his response is, this time.
All right, so let's actually get into the final part of character creation before we get started, which is character relationships. So we have a compatibility score. Compatibility score does influence one move. That's kind of situational. But the main thing it does is it gives us a baseline of how our characters feel about each other. So a compatibility score, basically, just it's what its name implies. It describes how compatible you are. They range from -1, which is frenemies, to +3, which is family or found family. I recommend that we start with -1 to +1 when we start, just to kind of give characters room to grow. But since this is a one shot, I'm fine if you go higher. So the ranking of each one: -1 is frenemies, 0 is acquaintances, you know, and like each other fine, 1 is friends, +1 is good friends, and then +3 again is family, in the more like emotional sense, unless the like you are literally bound by blood sense.
For the sake of figuring this out, because I don't think we ever actually covered it, Eric, what is your character's name, playbook, and descriptor?
We did. It's Marcus Albright. I am the Mon Trainer who talks to creatures.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I've spaced on that.
No, well, it happens. Fine.
I think for Marcus, Tatiana's would be a plus, would just be 0.
Just acquaintances? We just happen to be traveling together?
Yeah.
Yeah, that works.
And for Wesley, I think it's -1 because of how you talk to your ghost. I'm sorry, but this girl lives in denial.
Okay. That's fair.
If you're a creepy older ghost masquerading as a 13-year-old, I'd be put off by that if I was that age.
I would say it depends on how horny the 13-year-old is, but, you know.
Okay, well, I mean, that's true. That does make a difference.
It's like, How much can I forget and just go with it?
All right. So what about Wesley and Marcus? How are they feeling about each other?
That is a good question. To be completely honest, I think also kind of just acquaintances. They're traveling together. Their companions may not like each other, but Marcus and Wesley may just be like, yeah, okay, with each other.
Yeah. Okay. And since we brought up traveling together a lot, how are you familiar with each other? You know, especially because you're all kids, are you know part of a traveling summer camp, or you know, are your parents part of some group and they just kind of like leave you off on your own to do your own thing? Why are you together as a group? What binds you together?
I have an idea.
Okay.
Shoot, I got nothing. So.
Well, first, Marcus, how old are you?
15.
Okay. We all attend the same school.
Okay.
And then one night when the parents were all at their PTA meeting, they all mysteriously disappeared. And we set out to look for them.
Okay.
Oh, that provides a good impetus for the one-shot adventure, too. I like it.
Yeah, I like that as well. All right, looking for disappearing parents. All right, I like that. Okay, anything else for kind of session zero questions or stuff you want to talk about your character before we move on to the session itself?
I'm good.
No, I'm good too.
Perfect. Do we want to take a small break before we continue, or are we good to keep going?
I'm good.
Yeah. All right. I am good as well.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay, perfect. So, we are about to play Under the Neighborhood, and to do that, we have to discuss one other thing. Because every session of Under the Neighborhood starts with our core mechanic, which is what we call slice of life complications. And that's because in the cartoons that inspired Under the Neighborhood, unless you're talking about like a big plot episode, a lot of episodes actually have a relatively standard format. They start with a mundane slice of life complication, something like my coffee machine broke. And then when combined with the magical world, they turn into a fantastical adventure. So Nexia, an example I like to give is in the TV show Gravity Falls. There is an episode that starts with the relatively mundane issue of Dipper, the main character, gets challenged to a fight by a surly teen. It's not something that happens every day, but it's something that happens with kids. You know, they get challenged to fights. Where it gets weird, though, is that instead of fighting this teen, Dipper takes a Street Fighter arcade character, brings him to life, and then has to deal with this otherworldly creature that he's trying to basically have a fight for him. So, again, we start with something mundane and relatable, and then we move on, and as the game goes on, it turns into something fantastical.
So, I have an idea.
Okay.
Under the Neighborhood is a Powered by the Apocalypse game created by Kyle of the podcast Quest Friends. Our music comes from Monument Studios and was paid for personal usage. Our podcast is powered by Anchor. Thanks for listening and happy Halloween.